Yeah, one other thing I was going to share, which is pretty interesting in the way that we, when we were talking about the vaccine mandate, we had accommodation requests because by law we were required to offer accommodations. And I remember thinking, you know, we typically have probably 25 accommodation requests a year for an 8,000 person company. And we had 1,200 people put in accommodation requests. And so, what am I going to do? This is not normal. This became my day job for 2 months, trying to figure out, was our philosophy on accommodations, particularly for religious accommodations, going to be one of trust, one that said, you know, that's between them and whatever leader up high that they serve, if they're being honest about this being a religious thing, or are we going to take a really hard-nosed approach? And I think essentially where we landed on that, which was most people got their accommodations if they were able to give us what we needed. If it was truly political in nature or personal and didn't have any tie into religion, we couldn't in good faith do that because it tainted our accommodation process. But we led people to water. They just had to drink. So we ended up having forms that they would fill out where they would, you know, have all the criteria to get there. They just had to submit them. And then if we needed to ask questions and they would just communicate with us, you know, we were moving them through the accommodations process. That was the way that we could temper the feeling that they were being forced to do something with their bodies that they didn't want to do. And that was my way of trying. It was really hard. It was kind of an I feel dirty moment for a missionary's daughter to ask people about their faith. I could control the way that we went about it. You know, if we made it be a humane process and at the end result, people really were feeling seen and heard and still getting to keep their job. Maybe it was a job with a mask on forever, but at least they were going to get to keep their jobs. Then I felt like what we had done had made a difference. And so that was interesting. So I'm proud to say in 2 months we tackled our way through 1,200 accommodations and made a difference in, you know, 1,200 people's lives in the way that we looked at their unique situations and moved it through the process.
And I think that's where most large organizations landed, where, okay, we're not going to cross-examine people on the scope of their faith because it just became overwhelming. And it's also unfriendly, like you said. So, but it was definitely a challenge.
I'll add something on that, which is, interestingly, Disability Rights Texas didn't receive very many requests about accommodations on the vaccine, of course, on the disability piece. And I wonder, I don't know why. We did receive some requests for accommodation assistance on it, but it compared to so many other accommodations, it was a very small number of requests. And I wonder why that might have been. Maybe one of the factors is that employers did have robust practices in place to grant the accommodations. And so people didn't have the same pushback because we thought we would probably see much more in terms of need for help or requests, but we really didn't get very many intakes on asking for accommodations from any vaccine requirement.
Well, and that too, for my clients, if it was something legit, for example, I saw a few where legitimately, you know, someone would say, hey, I have an immediate family member who had an adverse event related to a vaccination, and by and large, yeah, my clients were like, okay, we'll just count that and we'll put you in the accommodation bucket. So that's probably how most employers were handling it, which I think made sense under the circumstances.
We did have a few denials, obviously, and what when we had those, if they had not gone the religious route and they had gone the medical route, if they'd gone the medical route and not gone the religious route, we told them there were other options. It was a little easier to navigate the religious hurdle probably than the medical because you were having to work with a provider. There's certain documentation. We wanted to preserve the integrity of our accommodation processes from that. We didn't have a whole lot of people, but the one thing we could control if we were saying we can't do that, we can't accommodate you, we were trying to control but we want you here. And so here's what it looks like if the mandate goes through. And there will be opportunities, hopefully, for you to come back if we get on the other side of this. And we were going to try to do right by them as much as we could control. And I think, again, that's how we managed through the pandemic was our how and what we could control and then weaving through caring for our people and all of that.
And I'm glad you raised that issue because I was getting a lot of phone calls and where they raised the issue that, look, it's a terrible labor market. And so, for example, I was representing a hospice company that is in a rural area. They were having trouble getting their vaccination numbers up, and there's the CMS mandate. And the owner was desperate because he said, okay, if I let these people go, I don't have anyone to hire. So everyone was dealing with some very real-world issues, mm-hmm. You know, that actually could shut a company down. But anyway, let me move on to another scenario that, Leah had given us. Let's assume that a client works in the office of an HVAC company scheduling service appointments. This client is immunocompromised, but the employer wants her to work in person and is promising they're going to have very strict COVID guidelines. The employer agreed that there would be masking, no admittance for non-staff members, social distancing, but the rules are not really adhered to in practice. How did you handle that one?
In that example, I think the first day the client was back, they had pizza delivered. And so this pizza delivery person came in without a mask with pizza, and it just got worse from there. So the employer didn't seem very concerned with following any of the guidelines that they had crafted and that the client had agreed to. So in that situation, again, we worked with the employer and we were able to get it resolved pretty quickly. But I think what... this is kind of speaking to maybe a different issue slightly, but when we have clients contact us, I think that they feel glad and empowered that they have somebody who's making these requests for them, who's a lawyer. But then there's also a sense, I think, sometimes of, well, why wasn't my request enough? Why did a lawyer have to get involved? And it is disempowering to the client in some ways that their own voice is not enough. So my point in sharing that is, I think for those of you who are working with employers, to give them that perspective, that if you have an opportunity to show your employees that they are empowered and that you respect them, one way is through engaging with earnest interactive process and the accommodation process. Because here, the employer had come up with good guidelines, they were reasonable, and our client had agreed to them. But then again, the employer just kind of disregarded them, which I think made our client feel like they weren't important, that she wasn't really actually significant, or that people weren't really concerned with her.